Miss Harpreet Guman was born and raised and educated in India before emigrating to America, and after a stint in the San Francisco Bay Area, settled in the village of Arroyo Grande, California. Miss Guman's work history included leading Oracle-based enterprise learning systems of more than 30,000 learners at Vodafone. She parlayed her extensive experience developing and coaching C-suite executives and senior teams in various high-tech industries into a successful industry consultancy business. A sampler of her client history includes working with Harvard, Bank of America, Hilton, Unilever, Qualcomm, and the state of Washington, garnering recognition for her innovative solutions. Showcased at various Harvard Business Publishing panel discussions, Harpreet melded lessons learned throughout her life journey into a new book, Living and Loving Unapologetically, a powerful call to action for women who, like Guman, dare to forge their own path. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join Harpreet Guman as she shares her life journey and her new book that serves as a powerful call to action for women. The book is a must-read for anyone who has ever felt societal pressure to conform. Leading Women on a Journey of Self-Discovery, Living and Loving Unapologetically. Harpreet Guman, and you are the author of Living and Loving Unapologetically. This is a new book, just came out, right?
That's right. This is a proof copy. It's getting launched on July 23rd.
This is a new book, but it's an old book for you in that it's about your life journey and lessons learned and how you can share those with other people, correct?
That's correct.
Let's go back in time. You were born and raised in India, and you went to school there, and then what happened?
So I grew up in a very loving and progressive family in India. On dinner table, individuality and spirited debates were really encouraged. Education was important, so was having an opinion. I was never forced to conform to traditional career paths like being a doctor or an engineer.
They didn't push you in any direction?
No. Not at all. I think it was extremely important for my parents, for me and my brother, to have a voice, mm-hmm. to have an opinion. So I feel I was very privileged to have taken birth in a place where I could be who I wanted to be in a world where everybody is trying to change you. Patriarchy did not exist at a home. My dad ensured that women had dominant voices, and he cherished that.
That's really interesting. He was an army colonel in the Indian Army.
Correct.
And there's some paradoxes there in that he was at the same time very evolved and very open. Explain that.
That's an interesting question. I never thought about that way, you know, being in the Indian Army, where it's all about hierarchy. I think he was a very spiritual person. And for some reason, I think he wanted my mom to be the queen of the house. So he knew that I'm the earning member of the family. But two kids, if you ask us, we thought a mom was taking all the shots, right? Though right. My mother was master's and she was a teacher in a school, but every 2 years we would move because my dad would get posted out. My mom's career would suffer. And I think maybe that was my dad's way of compensating. So, you know, allowed her to be the queen of the house and matriarch of the house.
In a way, a saving grace for you. And for how you matured and figured your life out, you had a cool foundation to start from.
Absolutely. I can't thank enough. I have so much of gratitude, you know, to have my parents. And absolutely. And another thing that comes to my mind, my dad would often joke. He says, what is a generation gap, right? It's the distance that we create. So he would often say, let's hear to the kids. He would tell mom, I'm sure what they know, we don't know. He was always curious, so that really allowed us. It wasn't like the decisions would be made at his level.
Mm-hmm.
He would involve us. Every decision involved each one of us.
Well, how many kids were there?
Oh, I have an older sibling, just two of us. You're mm-hmm. talking about...
your family, yeah.
Oh, so just older brother?
Mm-hmm. Where did you go to university, and when you started, what did you think you were going to do?
I had no freaking clue what I would be doing, and interestingly, there was no pressure, unlike Indian parents, right, to be a doctor or be an engineer, right, all this way. I think we were just exposed to all the sports. We were exposed to as many activities we could. We were just told to give our best and just expand our perspective. I remember clearly in my first job, I didn't know what should I expect and what I should not expect. And it was a very unconventional role at that time, doing an MBA in 2000, right? So because I was allowed to pursue my own dreams.
That's really interesting. You went right to work after graduating with your MBA?
Yes, right after my first, I went to work. That's correct. Yeah.
What did you do?
So I did my MBA in marketing and I started my job, telecom company, which is Vodafone right now. Vodafone was very new. Telecom was very new in 2000. My job was training all the frontliners, right? That was the beginning of it. I started my career in marketing, but somehow I realized that I have flair of developing people, coaching people, hand-holding people. And that's how my career turned to learning and development. So my last job back in India in a big multinational company where I was leading and heading an OD function, my job was basically to help company meet their business goals by developing their individuals and teams.
Oh, interesting. As I told you about my friend, Mr. Krishnamurti from India, he told me about growing up and how the parents typically would tell you who you were going to marry. So culturally, you were kind of unique and you dodged that bullet.
I've had a very unconventional life growing up in India. And again, I would credit my parents. Unlike my cousins, they all had a pressure of getting married at 21, 22, 23. I didn't. I got married at the age of 42. It wasn't in my plan to stay unmarried for that long, but I wasn't willing to get married for the heck of it.
So no compromising.
No compromising. Mm-hmm. And I think for some reason, my parents allowed me to connect to who I am. They would, of course, once in a while, the question would come in. But once I got into my 30s, they said, she's independent, she's enjoying her life, you know, and she's good.
That's really cool. In spite of you being blessed with your acculturation in the family, you talk about in your book some of the barriers and some of the things that you have to overcome as a woman in the world, in the workplace. Talk to us about that. That's a thematic thread.
So as a single woman, it adds to the complexity. Most of the time, back in the organization, my character was assassinated. Instead of giving credit to my intelligence and the value that I brought in.
Was it twofold in that you have corporate hierarchy, so there are people always gunning for you, just power and control, whether you're male or female, but then you layer on that female dynamic, and you have a whole nother target, right?
If I look back, I worked in the organizations which were heavily male-dominated, right? I was the only, mostly all the time, in the leadership meetings or the groups. Honestly, I did not feel I was the only. I did not put focus or energy on being the only. I put focus and energy on the value that I brought in. So, yes, there were challenges, and I think I was not a giver. I was not willing to let go. So, things were challenging. I'm saying today that, yes, there was glass ceiling, but I think I was successful in smashing glass ceiling one after the other. I feel what helped me was not having a victim mentality and not bringing my gender in any way. If a man said something to me, I did not like it, I would not make a big issue out of it that, oh, I'm a gender. What's the problem? I did not like it. Let me tell him, hey, I did not like it. And sometimes it was an unconscious statement by that person. That person didn't even realize what he meant. So
cultural conditioning.
And the cultural conditioning back in India, patriarchy, you know, where the dominant voice of the house is usually your father, which was unlike in my case. And in the organizations, right, the leader and the leader was men. So it was hard sometimes for them to have disagreements by a woman.
Interesting. You have done some consulting, right?
That's correct.
Talk to us about that dynamic of your career.
So I moved to the U.S. in 2021, and I often joke about career change. country change, relationship change. Bring it on, middle of the COVID. So that was a big job. I think I survived. I did a pretty good job. Blessing in disguise. You would have never left a job where you have a paycheck coming in, right? Things are hunky-dory. You're doing well. People recognize the work that you bring to the table. So I took this as an opportunity, which I always wanted to do something of my own. So I started my practice unapologetically, Harpreet, in the US. There are three parts to it. I design and facilitate solutions for organizations. I coach senior leaders transitioning to the C-level, right?
These are major corporations that you're talking about.
Major corporations. The clients would be Hilton, Ogilvy, Qualcomm. Or I also teach at Harvard Business Review. And these are all Fortune 200 or 500 companies that I'm talking about. But what I'm really passionate about is, and I feel fortunate again that I'm able to do, is to work with women. Because as I'm sitting in front of you today, my vision, or you can say my personal purpose, is to create a better world by including women in all the places where policies, decisions, strategies are being made. And I feel it's even more critical now. We are facing irreversible changes, climate changes, species extinctions, war, etc., blah, blah, blah.
Back in time in India, you had a female head of state, Indira Gandhi.
100 years back.
Yeah. So you guys were really advanced in that modality.
Absolutely. And somewhere we lost it, right? Though we had Indira Gandhi as the first woman prime minister, and we lost it, and things have picked up now. Yeah.
So you feel optimistic going forward?
I've always been optimistic, and I'm very clear. I'm not going to wait for patriarchy or systems to get fixed. I strongly believe change inside me creates the change outside. I'm a big optimist person.
That's so cool. So that's something that you teach intrinsic in your message. Let's go back to your book, Living and Loving Unapologetically. It's a tutorial. It's a hands-on lessons, right? Life lessons. Talk to us about what's in the book.
So my real goal with this book is to help women rediscover themselves, the dreams that got buried long time back while they were busy supporting or fulfilling dreams of their partner or kids or aging parents, helping them step into leadership role with confidence, helping them create a life that they truly want with joy. And this book actually provides insights, stories, and strategies.
Give us some examples, some hands-on.
So it talks about, you know, one will require to break all the rules to create your own story, right? One is you want to go traditional stereotype, what is happening, and this is what a woman is supposed to be doing. If you want to make a change, you will have to create your own rule book. What does that look like? Like for me, I created my own rule book. I did not have no in my dictionary. I did not have the words like why me exist. So what are those words that look like for you? It's more like a journal, like a coaching compact capsule. So, you know, while I'm sharing my own stories, I put it back to the readers. How about you? What's going on for you?
Mm-hmm. How would you approach this problem?
How would you approach this? Mm-hmm. What is your fairy tale life? What is coming in your way? While I've said, this is what worked for me. Not necessarily it would work for you. So what is showing up for you? So by sharing stories of my own journey of navigating personal and corporate life as a single woman and experiences of successful corporate women across the globe, I came up with this book.
Do you do seminars? You do?
So I do keynote sessions. I do webinars. I do cohort-based programs for women. As I said, I'm on an unstoppable mission. I can't see a woman unhappy. And I really hope that a woman, when she reads this book, she is moved to take some step, even if that's a baby step. That would be a big achievement for me.
That's really cool. You live in Arroyo Grande, California, on the Central Coast. How did that happen? Why did you choose the Central Coast?
So that's funny. And I know I'm on the air. That's fine. So my husband was based out of the Bay Area. And when I decided I'm not going to do 9 to 5, so we said, okay, we can move to Pismo Beach, right? COVID was there. Everybody, anyways, you know, was getting too tired of the cities. And for me, I told my husband, you know, for me, it doesn't make a difference. I've left my country. Any place would be beautiful. And mm-hmm. by the beach, it's going to be excellent. So when we moved in, the first place where I lived was Pismo Beach for 3 months. And I'm a terrible co-driver. I must admit that, right? We were going somewhere and I gave some wrong directions to my husband, and that happened to be a Rio Grande. And both me and my husband were like, oh, this place looks good. This has good houses. That's how aging happened, because everybody's like, how did you discover aging? Mm-hmm. So sometimes your imperfections lead to such beautiful things. Yes. And you're very happy about it.
Yeah, I love the old town in Arroyo.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's like a small town, little village.
Yeah, we're right in the village. So
okay.
Yes, we love that area. We're mm-hmm. very happy to be here.
How does somebody learn more about you?
So the book is getting launched on 23rd of July. People can visit my website, www.unapologeticallyharpreet, to get more details when we get closer to the launch. Readers can follow me on LinkedIn, Harpreet Kumman. And I'm looking forward to hearing some unapologetic stories from amazing women out here.
How cool. We're friends on LinkedIn now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you're going to see my friend in
I'm very
Berkeley
excited.
Tomorrow.
Thomas.
She's in United Nations group for
right,
women.
Right, and she's doing some amazing work for women.
Yeah.
Thank you for the introduction that you made.
Harpreet, thank you so much.
It was my pleasure to be here.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. We've been speaking with Harpreet Kumman, the author of Living and Loving Unapologetically, Fearless Women Leaders. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.